This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Did he hit Austin? My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
I just want to do things my own way, you know.
All I want to do is get back to where I came from, back to where I started, back to where I want to be. All I want to do is get back to something familiar, to a place I know, where I can be me. Tell me if this ain't the place that I'll kindly leave. All I want to do is get back to the people I care for, back to those I trust, to the ones I love. All I want to do is get back to the mountains.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in crystal clear high definition audio, or something quite like it, from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, where I record all of you out there, the fans, people from all kinds of musical ability, come to Trinidad to record. You can always email me, phil@philpritchett.com. I've had people sending me hard drives to mix, master, etc. Oh, it's been very exciting here of late. So many people coming to the studio, so many shows being played. Broadcasting today to all corners of the globe, we welcome all of you listening on your handheld devices of whatever that may be, listening to what is going on in Phil World back here in the States. If you're abroad, I'm talking about gigs, business, films, basketball. Blake Walker will be in here a little bit later on talking about fishing or something. Who knows, man? It's that kind of that time of the year, man, where we talk fishing, talk basketball playoffs, etc. And of course, as always, all things music, all things entertainment. Thrilled to have you here, folks. Thrilled to have you here listening into the P2 Podcast. What is this, episode 110, 111 or something like that? Can you believe it's been that long, folks? Have you heard them all? My apologies to my friend Eric Albers out there listening in St. Louis. How you doing, Eric? He called me out as we did a Cool and Unusual Punishment in the Vault. I got an email. Hey, man, you already did that record way back when, way back in the 30s or something. And he is absolutely right. Am I repeating myself? I don't know. I think I did mostly new songs. I tried to do new songs. But yeah, we were talking about live albums. I thought it fitting to play a live album. So my apologies for any redundancy there, of course. We're always trying to stay out on the cutting edge. But man, no doubt, I'm going to revisit some of these records we do in the vault at some point. Some of them deserve more than just playing a couple songs on, man. Some of them I can play every dang song on it. So, who knows? Don't be alarmed if in the future we do revisit some of these great titles. I mean, how can you just hit St. Dominic's Preview by Van Morrison one time? Or, you know, you just do one Revolver by the Beatles. Man, you can come back and do all the other songs at some later date. So don't hold it against us out there. But thank you for emailing, Eric, for keeping me on my toes. It's you, the fan out there, listening. That's how I know you're all listening out there. Shoot me some emails. Thanks, Phil. Thanks for doing this. Hey, watch out, you did this, etc. So we appreciate any and all input you send to phil@philpritchett.com. Well, 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 what's been happening lately? I'll tell you what's happening right now. It's been a long time coming, but it's happening. My queue on Netflix. Empty. Empty right now. I keep getting the emails hourly. Your queue is empty. Your queue is empty. I've kept pace with this thing for so long. Oh man, and then I started. I've talked so much about watching Mad Men. I watched every episode of Mad Men. Four seasons? 12 a season, like 50 episodes. I strung that out for about a year almost, man. It was great. Watching Mad Men. Oh, we got a new disc. It was a little early and we liked the episode. Let's watch the next episode. We'd watch it. Or if we just, you know, might watch half an episode and we'll pick it up tomorrow. But it was fun. Netflix, love it. Of course, I got the kids, man. I always got some kids stuff in the queue, you know, and stuff showing up in that category. But now we've kind of got the Netflix streaming on the Wii. Got the Nintendo Wii in there, so you can, you know, watch instantly a lot of titles. So that's kind of been a deal. We kind of do that a lot. And I just have gotten lazy on the queue. And not only that, man, I was kind of disappointed. I was looking so forward. Boy, is this a thing for today? The film The King's Speech. Best Picture, correct? The King's Speech, Best Picture, hallowed film. You know, Best Actor, Colin Firth, Jeffrey Rush, blah, 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 blah. It's British, it's fancy, it's a drama. The King's Speech won everything. Even watching the Oscars, I just shrug. I hadn't seen it, I don't care. I'm just watching the Oscars to see who falls down getting up on the stage. Or who comes out and does a funny bit or something like that. I hadn't seen any of these movies. Black Swan and all. I'm just like, oh my God, this looks terrible. So I'm just wondering who goes to see these movies. I think the answer a lot of times is nobody. But, you know, someone keeps making them. So I was very excited about seeing The King's Speech. Some good acting, you know, British. I've already done a little podcast episode of my obsession of all things British. Monty Python, The Beatles, et al. Forever. Love the British. So I think, man, we're going to order The King's Speech, Netflix. I mean, how often do you get a Best Picture DVD show up in your mailbox of a film you have not seen, a film that is British, you love British stuff, and I was all excited. So we get on the couch there, throw in The King's Speech, here comes Colin Firth in his, you know, trench coat and his top hat. He's if you haven't seen it, it's I think I'm the last guy to see it, but if you haven't, still, Colin Firth is King George the Sixth, I think, of England, who was around the king. He was king of England about when World War II broke out. The father of Queen Elizabeth, I believe, the current Queen of England. Anyway, he had a stammer, had a stutter. He couldn't speak very well. And around this time, of course, World War II, you've got the influence of radio has now come in. You know, there's some passages in the film about how the king used to just stand on a balcony and wave. That's all he did. Or place a sword on someone's shoulders. That's what the king did. But now you have the microphone, those big old awesome-looking microphones that you speak into to broadcast on the radio. This is what the king needed to do to speak to the people on the radio. So that is where our story picks up. It's him trying to give a speech at like this horse racing event or something, and he's stammering. It's so uncomfortable. He can't get the words out. He's... Today, we, you know, it's like that. It's very heartbreaking. So anyway, he seeks out his speech therapist, this specialist with unorthodox methods, you understand, Jeffrey Rush, the great actor, you know, the King Pirate in Pirates of the Caribbean. You kids will know him from. But he won an Oscar for Shine, I believe, about the piano player, eccentric piano player, and David, what's his name? Anyway, man, everybody kind of knows the story of it already, so it plays out. And man, oh man, was I disappointed. I hate to say that. I was expecting drama. I was expecting to care. I was expecting to give a damn about what was going on. I don't know if it just got me on a bad night, but man, you want to talk about slow, dude. Maybe my mind has been warped by all of these, space movies and comic book hero films. There's just nonstop action. Of course, I don't really watch any of that stuff, but damn, it was slow, dude. And the thing is, the whole British deal kind of bit the whole thing in the ass because they just don't show a lot of emotion. And I think also, so you don't get a lot of crying. You don't get any laughs. They're very just, yes, well, thank you. I'll stand my bit, but you've helped me very much. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah, and they move on. And it's kind of cold, a little bit. I was expecting this great relationship to form between the king and the speech therapist. Oh, they did this. And it shows him doing some exercises, and he does a little better, you know. But man, when your film, when the climactic scene is him giving a speech, standing in a room with a microphone, that's the big climax. It's just kind of like, gee whiz. And not only that, I felt like he didn't do that good. He still kind of got stuck on some words and he bumbled through a little bit. But he did okay. Then they just roll the credits at the end. So King George and his teacher became friends for the rest of their days. At the end. You know, just like, what? You know, I was just, nothing happened, really. It was, I didn't get anything from the film that I didn't get from just kind of watching the previews. It's like, it's sort of like, I was on the podcast, we talk about the idea of something. How I once read an article in the Wall Street Journal about soccer's popularity in America. And it really said, Americans don't really like soccer. They just like the idea of soccer. The idea of players from different exotic countries, you know, handsome men with some cool long hair running around the field and the crowds fighting in the stands. Yeah, we like the idea of soccer, right? I'm watching the World Cup. People say, I'm having a World Cup party in my house, man. Yeah, watching Spain and Brazil. You know, and you think, I mean, this guy's into soccer. But you kind of go over there. Is he really just watching every play of the game, appreciating the nuances of passing, you know, over in the back side of the pitch? Come on, man. He's just like, the Americans get bored. We like the idea of soccer, but we don't really like watching soccer like we watch football or baseball, and we know all the nuances of the, you know, the games. So that's kind of it. I like the idea of the King's speech. British, best actor, best film. Yes, it is in my queue. It is coming here. We're going to watch the King's speech. And lo and behold, it was a yawner, man. My wife was asleep half the way through it. It just put us to sleep. Goodness gracious. I mean, fine acting performances, don't get me wrong. But man, no warmth. No warmth in that film, man. No humor. Kind of a drag. I don't know. Did you love the King's speech? And then I was just thinking, how did this win Best Picture, man? It's just a... It's kind of like the English Patient. Remember that movie? Just you know, of course it won a lot of awards too. Maybe the Academy is enamored with British stuff as I am. You know, they voted all in there for Best Picture or whatnot. Yeah. I don't know what other films were running that could have won Best Picture, but the King's Speech, man, pretty dull. So if you've heard good things about it and you know it won the Best Picture and you hadn't seen it and you can put it in your queue, you know, to check it out on Netflix, hey. Phil gives it about 2 stars out of 5. The King's Speech. Oh, they tried hard. They were British. I loved it. But man, in the end, it left me empty, bored, tired, wondering why I sat through it. You know, it's also tough that it's a true story. Man, that bites a lot of stories in the butt, man. You know why? Because they take a lot of pride in saying, man, we want to really replicate exactly what happened. But unlike film, unlike the world of make-believe, real life is messy. The stories don't tie up at the end. No one lives happily ever after. Crazy, chaotic, and inexplicable things happen all the time. So they kind of kept trying to shoehorn in these events of, you know, the Germans invading, and he makes a speech, and then this happened. He went and actually studied at the man's speech center for 2 weeks, and that stuff did happen and stuff, but you know what? Doesn't mean it makes a compelling movie. I'm kind of like, all right. I mean, really, watching a guy, think about this, British guy taking speech classes. Does that sound like a good way to spend a night? Oh, man. Lord knows I abhor the, you know, the hero movies and all the CGI effects. I liked, like, Iron Man because it was funny. Robert Downey Jr. was hilarious in it. I love Batman. That was good drama. But, man, most of them aren't that great. But man, they're a darn sight better than sitting there watching the King's speech. I'm so sorry to say. Sorry, England. Well, jolly good. Let's get old Blake Walker in here to talk about... Take on another topic. Let's talk a little fly fishing with Walker next.
All I wanna do is get back to the mountains, to some peace and quiet, where I can't be found. Tell me if this ain't the time and I'll wait around. Ooh, baby.
Trans Romans countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting to every corner of the globe, to fans everywhere, huddled over an iPod, huddled in mass over a laptop somewhere abroad, just tuning in, fine-tuning in to the P2 Podcast to hear what Phil has to say, where he's been, what's going on, and most importantly, where the future is headed in music and all other things. Doing our best to bring you the news from the front. Phil Pritchett here. Thanks for listening, everybody, to this week's edition of the P2 Podcast. Well, 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 we are thrilled to have him here today. Former Phil Pritchett and the Full Band road manager, now eccentric, successful Dallas businessman. Blake Walker is here to share his thoughts, his recollections on all things music and life. I was intrigued talking to – how you doing, Walker, by the way?
Wonderful.
I just talk right over your intro here.
Wonderful.
Great to see you again. I was intrigued. I'm getting ready to head up here. I'm going to be in Colorado. I spent a lot of time up there in the summer.
Great.
That's just part of the P2 deal.
Yeah.
You know, the world of Ralph Lauren, the world of Phil Pritchett. The world of
sweater
Phil,
tighter on your neck.
Oh, the world of Phil Pritchett is just, you know, up there in the blue jean jacket, just looking out over the mountains, just writing a song on the mountaintop. That's what Trinidad is. It really is. It's not a made-up thing. That's what this deal is, man. Everybody out there can be a part of it. By coming to record here at the studio, of course. But man, I loved your story. When did you go? You were up there in Colorado doing some fishing here not too long ago,
man,
am I right?
Yeah. One of my cousins is getting married, and they wanted to go to Vail
Vail.
Have the bachelor party.
Yeah.
And I told him, I can't
Hard
go.
To get away.
Yeah. And he said,
that's not cheap.
He said, I'll pay for it. And I said, I can definitely be there.
I'll be there. I can't afford that.
My bags were already packed once he finished the sentence.
So you grabbed your fishing tackle, or do you have all that up there?
Mm-mm.
Nothing.
Man, I brought nothing. I come from a fly fishing family.
A fly fishing
period.
Family,
we
right.
We fly fish, that's it. I never got to do anything else growing up. I thought everything else was sinful. My dad told me
bait fishing
was sinful because you kill the fish.
Yeah.
And you only eat the fish unless you have to survive.
Right.
So we always kissed them and put them back. But went up to Vail, and it was a bachelor party, and all the guys were going skiing every day. And if you know me well, I have
not a big skier.
I have no coordination.
No coordination.
I will kill myself on skis. I'm the most dangerous man on skis you can be around. I've literally
you've proven that time and again.
I've had some run-ins in high school when I went on like a Young Life trip, and I almost killed a couple people, decided that's it. I'm done.
Skiing's a dangerous deal.
It's just
how the rich guys get killed. You know that in small planes.
Oh yeah.
It's always it's never just some blue collar dude. The rich invent ways to die.
Oh yeah. I'm just trying not to kill
falling
myself.
Falling out of a hot air balloon or something, you know.
Yeah. I'm constantly speeding down a hill just wondering how am I not going to hurt myself?
Yeah.
And then I realized
this
isn't fun for me at all.
Right.
So I got up there and my oldest brother was there, Brent. He's a really good fly fisherman.
Yeah.
Him and my dad are really good golfers and fly fishermen, and I'm terrible at both.
Now what time of year was this?
This was about 2 months ago.
So pretty damn cold up there.
Well, it was just at the
still
end.
Some snow.
Yeah, it was actually snowed a couple days we were there, but it was really light. And you can fish year-round. We went to Vail, and right outside of Vail, there's a Midturn Anglers. The dudes are awesome. Look them up if you're going
up
there.
It's like Midturn Anglers?
Yeah, the little town's called Midturn, and it's in between like Vail and I guess on your way towards
I've
Aspen.
I've heard of that. Yeah, yeah.
And there's two young guys, buddies, they own it. Anyways, we booked a little day trip with them. And they took
guide trips and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. They took
guys
us on
who
a
just
boat.
Tie their own flies.
Ooh, and, yeah. Really, yeah. Mountain men. Dude.
Yeah,
mountain
totally.
Men for sure.
Yeah.
And they took us out to the Roaring Fork. And it was kind of a little ways down the road. We were probably 45 minutes away from Midturn on the way to Aspen. And of course, my brother loves to rub it in. He's six years older than me. He's always beat me at everything I've ever done. I mean, he used to come home from college and you know, CDs were a big thing.
Right.
And we'd beg him for a CD because we wanted to hear all the cool music.
Yeah.
Well, he'd pull out, he had this duffel bag full of CDs and he'd set it down and he'd go, okay, here we go. We're going to play. We're going to shoot hoops in the backyard.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm going to spot you 9 points. We're playing to 10. All you got to do is make one basket. He's like, but I start out with the ball. If you make one basket, you can reach into this bag and take as many CDs as you want.
Oh, my gosh.
In the
Torture.
5 years
Torture.
That my brother was in college,
yeah,
I never once made that shot. Because my brother would foul you so bad. If he ever missed and you got the rebound, you were catching an elbow.
Yeah.
You were going to the ground. And so he would foul you so bad that you never got the chance to put that shot up.
See, but didn't that give you the character that's gotten you this far in life?
I guess.
Yeah, maybe
or the depression.
So.
I don't know. But He's really competitive. I mean, he would cheat.
Okay,
at,
right.
Cheat at Monopoly, you know.
So he's equally this way in fly fishing.
Oh, good.
I didn't
Lord.
Know you could compete in fly fishing.
Oh yes.
I guess if you catch a lot of fish, you can say, "Hey, look at me, you stink."
It's always always a bet who can catch the most and who can catch the biggest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like a river runs through it.
Right. Sure. Yeah. And so a rivalry of brotherhood.
We get out there. And my brother's, you know, he's trying to be – normally he never teaches me a thing. Usually he laughs at me when I tie a wind knot in my line and walks down the river and makes sure I don't mess up his fishing holes. But this time he was real cool. It's just me and him. Dad wasn't around. So he gave me some pointers. We get down there and the guide's like, "Hey, I forgot my lunch. I'm going to have to go down the street to get you guys lunch because we're going to be on a boat all day and eat on the cooler." And so the guide leaves and he tells me and brings like, "Hey, go down to this bridge. There's some deep holes there." He ties us off some nymphs, some underwater nymphs.
Right.
And he's got like three or four on there and a little strike
just
indicator.
Just drifting them down. Is it cold? Is it miserable? Are you in the water waiting?
It's not cold at all. It's actually, there's snow, a little bit of snow up on the ground, but the sun is out. It's probably like, by this time, it's probably 9-10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
It was great where we were at on the Roaring Fork.
But you're in the water, waders?
Yeah, we have waders on.
Insulated to keep you pretty warm, or is that pretty cold?
Oh, no. We have waders that are they're neoprene. They'll keep you warm in any water. As long as you don't got a leak, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
And you just pee in them if you get too cold. But you don't – not in neoprenes, you're good. You're usually good.
Yeah, sure.
And so, of course, he's going to the holes before me. You know, he gets down there first, and he's hitting all the holes. And I've got like three different nymphs tied on my line, so I've got three different options for that fish.
Right.
If you're not a great fly fisherman, that's my best advice, is find the three best things that people are saying is getting
tie
eaten.
Tie them all on.
Tie them all on, and get yourself a little indicator.
Are you tying them off the same – do you tie them off the hooks?
Yes.
One hook to the next. Okay.
And get yourself a little strike indicator. A lot of guys like to use a dry fly for the strike indicator.
A big dry fly.
And then you have four options.
Yeah.
Which is even cooler. But you really, the problem is if you're not a great caster and you tie on a lot of stuff.
Jumbling them,
brother,
up.
You tangle that thing up and you get a real bad day.
So
for me, my trick is to roll cast. I just sit on the bank,
flip upstream.
Let it roll downstream and then roll your arm back over. Real simple. Yeah. Always leave the line out. You don't get caught in the trees. Well, I you know, Brent and I, of course, he makes the bets.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, biggest fish bet, most fish
bet.
I've never beat him ever.
Has he already pulled a couple out of these holes ahead?
None yet. But we've been fishing since we were. I mean, gosh, my dad used to take me to Beaver's Bend, Oklahoma.
Yeah,
right above Dallas.
Trout fishing.
That's where I learned to trout fish when I was probably 10 or 11, and we've been going ever since. And I'm 30, and he's 36, so we usually get at least one fishing trip in a year.
Sure.
And so, man, we're hitting it hard, and of course. I know I've had many days with guides. I mean, many. My dad's taken me to Wyoming and Montana and Colorado almost every summer. And
you've been all over the big fly fishing.
I've not caught fish in every great fly fishing state. and so I've stood on the bank and just enjoyed the nature.
And just watched huge fish swim around your fly and just say, I just can't.
And I've caught.
Nothing happens.
Usually I'll catch one decent one a day. Not a huge one, but an okay one.
Just to kind of get you through to the next day. Yeah.
And so this day I was kind of preparing myself for this some quality time with the big bro. Don't get to see him a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, we're just going to have a good time. You know. So we're on the river, and he's hitting all the holes before me, and he's kind of going ahead of me. And I found this one really deep hole right after a rock. And the
looked
water's
inviting.
Dark.
Looked inviting.
Absolutely. Man, right after like an eddy where the water's kind of moving.
Yeah, kind of clear.
Right behind
it
where
calm.
The water starts to slow down, and it gets darker.
Yeah.
Know, that's how you know it's real deep. And so – and this guy had put a weight on my little rig as well. So, man, I hit this hole probably 20 minutes. I mean, I just wouldn't leave it. I just kept hitting it, kept roll casting.
Just floating your nymphs.
Just right through that
just
hole.
Dragging
man.
Them through the hole.
And I thought, man, I'm not going to move because it doesn't matter anyway. I'm not going to catch anything anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm going to sit right here. I was comfortable. Dude, I just roll cast. And all of a sudden, I felt like, man, I just got it caught on a tire at the bottom of the river.
And it just gung.
And it just hit. And I pulled my rod tip up and got the line, you know, taunt, but not too tight.
Oh,
and
you
dude,
feel
I,
that lovely I, resistance.
It started to pull, and I saw the line kind of go out towards, you know, the middle of the river, and that's when, you know, it was a huge rainbow and it jumped. And when it jumped, I always kind of lose it for just a minute, just get real nervous for a minute.
Because you know he's going to shake the fly.
Yeah, because you're like, man, he's going to pop the damn fly off, and I'm going to be so upset. And I'm going to see him and pop the fly off and be mad. So he jumps, and about that time, my brother sees the jump, and he's like, oh man, he starts laughing, he starts giggling, because he knows I'm gonna break it off, and he's just gonna laugh the rest of the day about how another huge fish I broke off, because this happens this happened many times.
He's and seen so, this play out.
So dude,
they're hard to land, man.
Really,
I mean, I do a lot of I've done a lot of fly fishing, even just catching little Trout in a pond. Yeah, when they do jump and they flip it. I mean, if a hook doesn't have a barb on it, which they really don't.
No, if you're a real fly fisherman, you ain't got anything but a tiny little hook.
And if it
no barbs.
It's really easy that if that line gets slack at all and he throws his head, it just
the line's
right got
to be taut but not too tight.
Right.
And when he wants to run, you got to give him the play, but you got to keep the rod tip up and you got to know what angle.
Because those y'all not fishing, your tippet there on your fly line is very very light. Like I know it'll snap. It'll snap on a couple pound fish if you're pulling real hard on it.
Yeah, it's an art form.
It's an art form. That's right.
I'm used to striper fishing.
Yeah.
Or going catching catfish or bass with your buddies.
With 25 pound test line.
You just rip their lip out of their mouth. And so you have to totally throw that out the window when you're fly fishing. And so, dude, this guy starts to run.
You just kind of hang the fish.
I see him jump. I just leave my arm up, and I play
with him. So did your heart go into your throat when you saw the jump? I was just like, oh, my God.
When he jumped, I thought, it's going to be a shame when I lose it.
Right.
It's going to be so depressing when I lose this fish.
When you feel the slack line. Just,
So I fought him for about 10 minutes straight, and he kept – when they go out into real fast water and real deep water across, that's bad. You want
really
to work them.
Pulling,
you want to get them to where you can work them towards you to the calm water by the bank, so you can go net them, or however. I mean, most guys, will net by themselves. I usually get help and somebody will come up with a net. But if you're gonna net by yourself, you got to get them in the nice calm water next to the bank and pull your arm as far as you can out to your side, you know, and come up behind them. And so this guy fought and he went out in the middle of the river. And my brother keeps, you know, he's giggling, laughing. But by now he sees I've had him on for a while, so he comes over to my side of the river. And he's getting the net out, and I'm fighting him. And finally, after about 15 minutes or so, I see him real nice and close. And it's a huge, probably 21, 22-inch rainbow.
That's a big rainbow.
And I'm so excited because I know at this point, like, my brother's got the net. He's behind him. Even if he broke the line, you could probably net him real quick.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting really excited. And so my brother pulls over, gets him. And, dude, that sucker was huge, about 22-inch rainbow.
Yeah, oh, man, yeah.
And so I pick it up. I got a picture. I put it on Facebook. And, dude, I was so pumped. I mean, and
exciting.
The truth is I only caught two fish the rest of the day. Uh-huh. And that's an eight-hour day on a boat all day. Mm-hmm. And they were tiny. But that one fish kept me all day long, mm-hmm. just a huge smile on my face.
Kiss him and throw him back?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And just giving my brother a hard time was the best part because
he
never caught one that big the rest of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And so just giving him the hard time about – because he always gives me a hard time about how I'm just a terrible fisherman. But it was so fun.
To the victor go the spoils,
It was awesome.
You're entitled to that.
It was awesome.
That is great stuff, man. Yeah, I mean, those rainbow trout, man, they fight hard. Man, we catch – I mean, at the camp up in Colorado, they've got a pond with them.
Yeah.
You're lucky to get something 15, 16, 17 inches is really big for that.
Yeah.
Most of them are 10, 12, 14 inches. But, man, they fight. I mean, you can't – I mean, I break them off all the time when I get impatient. I'm like, I'm just going to drag this one up.
Yep.
And just snap the line. God, I've lost so many. They're just going to be fishing that little pond, man, with my flies in the corner of their mouth. just tons.
The most frustrating part for me about fly fishing was a lot of people see – you know, a movie like A River Runs Through It, where all they're doing is dry fly fishing.
Right.
And they're excellent casters, the guys who portray them in the film. Mm-hmm. You know, and with a dry fly, you have to leave it has to look like a fly's landing on the water. So you have to have a perfect natural cast to make it look like that fly is really landing on the water. And that's really hard to do. And you got to be a good caster and put it where you want it and get a good dead drift.
Right.
Well, my dad was obsessed with dry fly fishing.
So you told me this. I didn't realize there was that much of a superiority complex with the dry fly fishermen.
It's like
which after you've told me about it, I was aware of it.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, some guys think it's impure to use any kind of a wet fly, anything below the surface,
yep.
like a nymph or
cheating.
Something like that. Cheating.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to draw them to the surface.
Yeah.
Present the dry fly, keep it afloat. That's part of the art.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was such a – you go, oh, man, my dad will not – because I'll try all kinds of stuff if I'm not catching fish.
Yeah.
I start putting on anything. Just
yeah.
like, I'm trying some nymphs. I'm trying little woolly buggers, anything under the water.
I just want to catch fish.
That's right. That's right. But your dad, no way.
No way. His last resort will be to something under the water, you know, a nymph or whatever. And so
– probably still attached to a dry fly.
Oh, yeah. His indicator is always going to be a dry fly.
Uh-huh.
And, like, we went to Alaska, and we were just catching freaking fish left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Nymphs. But in Alaska, the fish are huge, and they're almost untouched. I mean, you're catching –
what are y'all catching?
We're catching rainbows. We're catching Dolly Vardens and graylings, and you catch salmon, king salmon, silver salmon. You can catch all that stuff on the fly rod. But the
river, lakes?
Rivers, You can catch pike on the lakes out there, but the rivers is where you catch the salmon are coming out of the seawater mm-hmm. into the freshwater before they die.
Mm-hmm.
And the silvers come in there too in the freshwater and the rivers, and we caught a ton of that stuff. And my dad was complaining in Alaska because he wants to catch everything on a freaking dry fly.
Yeah.
And this is the most beautiful country in the world.
The guides are like, man, you're not going to have a lot of luck.
Yeah, he's insisting to dry fly fish, and he's, oh, it's okay, but it's about like, you know, striper fishing, just pulling them straight out of the bottom of a tub. I was like, dude, are you kidding me? We're in Alaska, you know? And that's just his mentality. And so even if you catch a big one on a nymph, he's going to tell you it's cheating. You know, I ain't real fishing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me? You know, a bunch of bait junk.
What about using on a dry fly? Is he allowed to use a little
zinc or whatever to keep it float?
A little gink? A little,
oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He'll use that, or is that considered impure?
No, that's all. That's fine. His deal is.
I've also heard of guys who won't wear waders.
Okay, that's hardcore.
Like, who would just wear their shoes and their slacks.
Like the real hoity-toity, like,
yeah, like the Montana,
school.
Like the old dudes with the bamboo fly rods. Yeah, they won't put on rubber boots or anything.
See, that's crazy. I wouldn't
yeah,
do
the
that.
Cold water, that's just kind of part of it.
No. That's, yeah, no. Yeah. I'm not going to – that's my dad's not that bad, but he definitely – his deal is dry fly. And so for many years, all I did was dry fly, and so I didn't catch a lot of fish.
Right.
But I've met guys now. When you go out with guides, if you have the money – you know, what's Ferris Bueller say? If you have the means, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of like golf. Mm. If you'll do one golf lesson from a great pro,
right,
you'll take so much with you for the rest of your golf game, and it'll change things. It'll help you. And the fly fishing is the same way. If you'll go out with somebody who's really, really good where you're at one time all day, they'll teach you a ton. And those guys can catch fish in any weather with anything.
Yeah,
they'll keep changing up flies. They'll know where to throw. They'll know. They'll explain so much to you about the anatomy of what, you know, these bugs are doing and how fish eat. And when you really get down to it, it's a science of the fish are going to eat. They don't starve themselves. They're always going to eat. You just got to figure out what they're eating.
Yeah.
And so some of these guys, man, they'll teach you a ton. If you go out on a day trip or something, or half day, and most of them are pretty friendly. They'll tell you a lot.
Yeah, I tell you everything, yeah. Well, that is some unexpected and enlightening fly fishing talk. I enjoyed it immensely. Hope you guys did too out there. Some of you fly fishermen out there listening to the podcast. Maybe you've never even fished in your whole life. Don't know anything about fly fishing. But there's a good little fish story where it did not get away from Blake Walker up there near Vail, Colorado, horsing in a big old rainbow trout. Loved hearing that story. Loved seeing the picture on Facebook. Thank you, Blake, for being here. Coming up in our next segment, as we are wont to do on this show, we are going to grab a record in the vault and discuss it in the segment next.
Sky, stop breathing.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Thank you for joining us this week. Thanks to Blake Walker. How about Walker, Texas Road Manager, once again astounding us, dazzling us with his insight, his experiences, his opinions on all things music, and so much more. Thank you, Blake, for dropping by. Always a treat. Well, here in the vault, as promised, we are looking at some old REM records, man. Stuff that you don't own. All of you out there in red dirt land, oh, maybe you got a greatest hit somewhere, blah, blah, blah. We're going to look at an album that REM made in 1985. I think it was the third record, Fables of the Reconstruction. At one time, derided by some members of the band, an album that really sucked. but then, as the years have gone by, the members of REM have come out and said, "Oh man, there's a perception out there that the band does not like Fables of the Reconstruction." But that's nothing could be further from the truth. So many unique songs on this, like the song we're playing here, "Feeling Gravity's Pull," the opening track. Just that dissonant little guitar signature at the top. So cool, man. A song written by lead singer Michael Stipe, lyrically about falling asleep while reading. You see, folks, you don't have to always write about whiskey, all you guys out there. Whiskey and putting a gun in your mouth and whatever else everybody's writing about these days. Write a song about falling asleep while reading. What does that sound like? Well, according to REM, man, it sounds like "Feeling Gravity's Pull." Kind of like the feel of falling asleep, you know. Cool stuff, man. REM. Well, man, I'm going to listen to some other songs off this record. It's a personal favorite of mine. I love this jangly one here, "Maps and Legends." Kind of a classic REM sound here. Mike Mills, bass player, just chiming in the background. "Maps and Legends." Boo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Gurgling bass, jangling Rickenbacker guitar. Check it out, "Maps and Legends," REM from Fables of the Reconstruction.
Can't see.
Maps and Legends, R.E.M., Fables of the Reconstruction, here in the vault on the P2 Podcast. Rolling out some old R.E.M., man, as we have been the last couple of weeks, and will for a couple other weeks. Just kind of going through the iTunes, man. Looking at what I have. CDs I burned in my iTunes years ago, and haven't revisited here in a long time. So you're just indulging me, folks, by hanging in and listening to me today. Thanks so much to all of you out there. Well, this next song's a favorite of mine, Life and How to Live It. A cool, upbeat R.E.M. classic here. You know, their label was IRS Records. What's the guy's name? Copeland. Not Miles Copeland, manager of Sting. Maybe it was Miles Copeland. Yeah, it was Miles Copeland. Isn't that right? Stuart Copeland's brother. Stuart Copeland, the drummer for the Police. His brother, Miles Copeland, he's still to this day Sting's manager. Really smart guy, music business tycoon. And I believe he was the head of IRS Records, the indie label that signed R.E.M. and worked with R.E.M. and worked him to college radio all those years ago. I remember hearing a story about him saying, man, we call it IRS Records because when we made a phone call to somebody, a radio station, they'd say, well, who's on the phone? They said, it's IRS. There's what? Oh, God, the IRS. What? They'd always take the call, you know? He had another business called a FBI booking or something like that. I mean, who's on the line? It's FBI. What? FBI? Oh, my God. So anyway, who knows, man? Maybe that attributed to REM's success along the way somewhere. You be the judge. IRS Records. Well, if I wrote a book, it would be called Life and How to Live It. REM.
Yeah.
I need to read that book. Life and How to Live It. Man, I could use a little advice from time to time. Couldn't we all? R.E.M., Fables of the Reconstruction here in the vault. I have heard people refer to this record as Reconstruction of the Fables, because on the record or on the cassette tape, it was written kind of in a circle. So it said Fables of the Reconstruction of the Fables of the Reconstruction of the Fables. So I didn't know if it was Fables of the Reconstruction or Reconstruction of the Fables. I don't know, man. I at one point, I could have sworn some people said you could say either one. I don't know. So much thought went into this stuff back then, you know? Goodness gracious. Now we just put a, you know, picture of ourselves on the cover and call it something and put it on iTunes. Not back in 1985. Fables of the Reconstruction, REM's third record, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. That is correct. Well, can't get there from here. A funky tune. A little outside of their comfort zone, man. When your world is a monster. A favorite of mine here. This is Can't Get There From Here. REM. Love the horns there at the end. Phil Pritchard on the P2 Podcast. Thanks for listening, fans. Send your emails to me, phil@philpritchard.com. If you need me to mix your record, master your record, if you want to come here and record your whole damn record, come on. Trinidad World Recording is waiting for you. Whether you're a pro, an amateur, a hobbyist, whatever, whether you have a band or you're just by yourself strumming a few chords, whatever, man. We do all kinds of projects here. Love doing it. Phil at PhilPritchard.com or just call me, 817-733-5256. Also call that same number and email to book Phil Pritchard and the Full Band for your summer bash. Whatever you got going on, little, if you're getting married or you're having a party or something out at the ranch, a little 4th of July, I think 4th of July is still open. Come on, man. Phil Pritchard and the Full Band. Give us a call. Shoot us an email. We'll make it happen. Well, me and Rodney Parker couldn't make an REM EP tribute deal without including this song, in my opinion. A REM classic, jangly with a signature lick, some minor chords in there, and some wistful, obscure lyrics about the countryside and trains and stuff. We love it. This is Driver 8 here on the P2 Podcast. We'll leave you at this one, and we'll see you next week, folks. Much tougher.
Dream.